Karina Sephora started her tutelage in metalworking before most kids are allowed to light a match. Now she's an acclaimed artist and dedicated teacher and mentor to the next generation of metal workers. Karina has a new solo exhibition on view at Callenwald Fine Arts Center called On Waters of Time. And she joins me now. Welcome, Karina.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I heard you were all of 5 years old when you did your first metalworking. How are you able to lift the equipment?
Well, at five, I would say really pretty much I kept my dad company in the shop, or you could say I was inseparable from him. I had my own welding mask, and I called welding electric lightning.
Ooh, poetic.
Yep.
Was your dad a sculptor as well?
He actually had his background in theater and set design from Yale, but he turned into wanted to live off the land and grow food and, create lumber from the forest. And so the first project we were doing was building a sawmill powered from the engine of a car.
And where was that?
This is in New Hampshire.
Wow.
Yeah.
Your dad was also a mentor. What did he teach you in addition to this respect for the wilderness, or for the land, I should say?
My dad really gave me a lot of, what gives me the energy to keep going, which he always said, Karina, you can do whatever you want as long as you set your mind to it, no matter what, the roles are in society or any of that, as long as you set your mind to what it is that you want to do, you can do it.
I guess, too, that we should clarify our terminology. What is the difference between welding and blacksmithing?
Oh, okay, great. So welding is, it is a metallurgical process where you take usually two or more pieces of metal and you attach them to each other using a variety of different techniques, either oxygen acetylene, MIG welding, TIG welding, arc welding. My dad and I mostly did arc welding.
Which is?
That's you have like a rod and you have an electric power source and you have a ground and you basically kind of complete that circuit so you create an electric fire. And then with that heat, actually I was just teaching a welding class last night, so it's funny that I'm talking about it again. But you heat the two metals, with the... Basically, electrically, you create a weld pool, and then you melt the rod into that. So that's good for, cast iron. We also use some oxygen acetylene. So you have two tanks and regulators and a set of hoses, and you heat the metal itself, and then you can actually even fuse the metal just without even a filler rod, or you can use a filler rod.
Sounds like there's a lot of science in
this
art.
There's a lot of science, yeah. Oh, that brings us to blacksmithing. When I was in college, I studied at Massachusetts College of Art in Boston. And my sculpture professor, they introduced blacksmithing. Actually, we went to Haystack School of Crafts in Maine for a long weekend and learned about blacksmithing. And the scientific term for what you do to heat the metal is you alter its molecular structure.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Wait, now, but blacksmithing, we think, medieval mm-hmm. Renaissance guilds mm-hmm, and 18th century colonies with the blacksmiths.
Yeah.
But did they even have the terminology for the molecular structure?
No, I'm sure that came a little later.
It was just, come on, baby, light my fire, right? However
like that,
you
yeah.
can get this metal to meld or yeah. melt or whatever.
Yeah, traditionally you would use a charcoal fire and use a fan to create the air to fan the fire. If you ever had a campfire, you kind of blow on it. So traditionally the forge is what you use to heat up the metal. And you would put the metal, you'd kind of lay the metal in that. And there's some ancient forges that were made with mud and even goat skins were used to create the air source that you would kind of pump the pump the goat skins that would feed the air into what's called a toyer, which is like the channel that would bring the air in. And then you have a mound of charcoal. And then inside that mound is the fire, and that's where you would heat the metal. And then, you know, it has advanced over time, of course. I have a coal forge, but actually I brought it to my friend's place up in the mountains, and I mostly use a gas forge. So I use propane, and then I have air is sucked in through it with a force. It's kind of sucked in, and that's what makes the fire hot. So we use a gas forge. It's a contained kind of box, basically.
My goodness. I know you have experimented or explored all art forms, all sorts of art forms, including jewelry making and ceramics, printmaking. Mm-hmm. What brings you back to metal each time?
That's a great question. And actually, my exhibition that you mentioned at Callenwald does show a broad range of my two-dimensional work, both printmaking and painting and collaging, and there's six large steel sculptures, steel and copper. And what brings me back to metal, there's something about the permanence of it. There's something about, you know, we look at steel, I mean, I see metal all around us, and it's angular and, you know, sort of manufactured. And there's something about working by hand with metal. It's like the invincible, you know, like you can, through heat and force and know-how, you know, you can create these very beautiful organic forms out of something that we see, bridges and, you know, buildings and structures, airplanes, you know, all these things that we see that are very manufactured, these lights right here in the studio, right? But there's something about being able to create something that has this fluidity, as you would see in organic materials, but it's got this permanence to it. And then I would say it's maybe like my ego. There's something about having an idea and taking it from a drawing, say in a sketchbook, which I have on view at the gallery for the talk, and then I usually create a drawing, oftentimes a scale drawing, and then build something, you know, plan it out and build something that's oftentimes larger than myself. And there's something about that feeling of putting the work together and then, you know, having it stand there and sort of like look down upon me, you know, I don't know how to describe the feeling, but
it doesn't sound like ego. It's, yeah. I mean, it's empowering.
Empowering,
but you're
that's
creating
good.
Something potentially more enduring than a human.
Yes.
And you're dwarfed by it.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful to hear you talk about the process, because I think metal is something most of us take for granted and don't even think about the beauty of it, as you just pointed out. If you are just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE. We're talking with the artist Corina Sephora about her solo exhibition on Waters of Time. Why has water become a theme central to your work?
Well, let's see. Water has been a common theme for a little over a decade, and there's a couple of reasons. I find it to be one of the most peaceful places. Like, where I'm at peace is when I'm by the water, whether it's the sea or a river or a stream or a pond, a lake. You know, there's something about that space. Going back, my grandfather was also a sea captain, and as a small child, we went on a number of voyages. We went to the Caribbean and a variety of places, and there was something about that, those memories of being out on the water and sort of, you know, like nothing and everything all right there. A number of years ago, I did an artist residency at the Vermont Studio Center in Vermont, and every day I would do a drawing, and every day I would make a small sculpture, and every day I would walk along this river and photograph the water at different times with the light, you know, shedding on it in different ways. Some of those prints are actually at the Callenwald Fine Arts Center. And then even going back a little deeper, kind of, I guess maybe spiritually, a number of years ago, I created a fairy tale. And there was a story that I had always been told by my mother ever since I was little, of when she was pregnant with me and she was jumping into a lake in New Hampshire, and very pregnant, and in midair, not on land, not quite in the water, and you know, just on the surface of the water, basically, she heard this voice or felt this voice, and it said, "My name is Karina. You have to name me Karina." Yeah. So I say that's perhaps where my soul met my body, right?
Oh, that is quite a story.
Yeah.
And you created the fairy tale. Have you written this down?
Yes. That's part of it's the opening chapter of a fairy tale that I wrote that's called Flowing as Water.
Oh.
Yeah.
How does water tie into themes present in your work, like immigration, migration, and life journeys?
Life journeys. Okay, so I'll start with immigration. I did my master's degree at Georgia State University in the sculpture and fine arts department, and graduated in 2005. And my thesis exhibition was called Exodus Populus, the Mass Movement of Ordinary People. And I started to look into my own personal family history, sort of to understand who am I right now. And midway through that process, my professors were like, well, what's so important about your story? You know, what about your community? And so I actually went to Ellis Island as part of my research and found our family name and, you know, just things like that, and got inspired by that environment where they actually came many years ago from Europe, May 1906. Found pictures of the ship that we came on and all of that. And with that challenge...
From Italy?
I do look Italian, huh? this part of the family, my father's side of the family, they came from Austria, Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, sort of around Russia and kind of Germany. And then on my mother's side, she was actually adopted. Back to the name. That was actually her name when she was first born. I forgot to say that. And her family, from what we can trace, is Mediterranean, a little tiny bit of Middle Eastern, and kind of a little wide span throughout Europe, a little bit of French, a little bit of English, England English. Anyhow, so I looked into immigration, and then I created a big group project where I did look at all of these. I invited people to collaborate in a project where we looked at family memory and personal history. So my thesis basically comprised of two bows of ships, one that was made from recycled steel drums that were cargo vessels, and so those named the ships, and the other was called self-loading cargo. And I used all images, and we used printmaking with 18 different people from the community, and we looked into their family histories and worked with images, and some people had family charts and stories, and just beautiful. And so that was the biggest immigration work that I did. And that stayed with me. That's when I really committed to working with the boat form in that time period. And then after that, a few years ago, I started working with this image inspired from the saying, we're all in the same boat. So I started creating these boat forms with people in them. And then I started seeing these images of refugees, basically, like really kind of crammed into boats, and different stories, you know, a young girl that was in the Olympics and swam pushing a boat full of 19 people. And so that I created a body of work related to that, and I am working with some refugees, actually, doing some art projects with young people.
It's all so entwined.
Yeah.
Very ambitious thesis as well. You do all women metalworking classes. You have classes specifically for women. In just the minute or two we have left, are there barriers to break down in terms of women in the blacksmith world?
I heard a statistic that when I first began my Open My Studio in the mid-90s, that there were maybe 50 women in America that were running professional blacksmithing studios and producing that type of work. And there's a huge growing number, you know, over the last, you know, 20-some-odd years. I do teach some classes that are specifically for women. I teach, you know, regular, weekly, and daily classes that are open to anybody. But there's something I think that is available in having a group of women just to be able to work with each other and not to feel that they have to be any other way than just how they are. And
in an art form, in a medium that is so traditionally masculine, not that it should be, but the associations are.
So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I was raised with Karina, you can do whatever it is that you want. And I also was in a shop when I was five, you know, so I have that behind me. And not everybody has that, but there's just this sort of like unending array of people who show up at my studio and say, I've always wanted to learn how to weld. I've always wanted to learn how to work with metal. There's something in me that just says that I want to be able to do this. And so I felt like I could provide that opportunity for people. And it's really wonderful. I call on a couple of young women that have worked with me in the past, and they work as the assistants for the workshop. And just this morning, I had someone sign up for our class in September.
Artist Karina Sephora's new solo exhibition is called On Waters of Time, and it's on view now at Callenwald Fine Arts Center. She'll give a public artist talk tomorrow evening at 7, and the exhibit is on view through September 1st. Mm-hmm. Karina Sephora, this has been a delight. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's been wonderful to be here with you today.